Good morning, everyone. We welcome you to our morning, our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We welcome you all, and our subject today is unreality. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent in Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And thanks for joining in this morning. We will start with Florence and our morning prayer.
This morning I'm reading from page 38 of Watches, Prayers, and Arguments and 63 of Divinity Course in General Collectanea. Make supplication to God daily that you may be delivered from all beliefs of sin or of sickness. And after doing this, then turn to and demand of yourself to realize their unreality and recognize your power over the temptation to yield to any such an illusion. And then the Christian Scientist's prayer. There is no matter and no mortal mind. God is all in all in harmony, health, holiness. This is the prayer unceasing, to be used on all occasions and at all times. It lays the axe at the root of unreality, materiality, that forbidden tree, and cuts it down. Preserve a sacred silence on the subject of prayer. Mary Baker Eddy.
That's perfect. Thank you very much. Okay, the watching point.
Watch number 285. In one of her classes, Mrs. Eddy taught as follows, quote, "Error is the talking serpent that talks to you against mother and Jesus and yourself and your brethren and cannot talk at all. Truth is, let God talk all the time. There is nothing else. Serpent is mere belief, explained by the words, a belief of personal sense that is governed by the truth is a harmonious belief. A harmonious belief governed by the truth is spiritual sense, understanding. God told Moses to handle the serpent, but Moses tried to run away from it. God told him to go back and handle it. Moses said, where is the serpent? God did not make one. God said, handle the serpent, and he did, and it became a rod. The rod of Moses was malicious mesmerism, and when he handled it, it was a power, for he had power over Lord's many and God's many, and it was a staff to lean upon. The rod that Moses threw down became through God the power of good. The rod Moses had, God did not give him, but God commanded him to throw it down, and it became a serpent, his enemy. Then God spoke to Moses, who fled in fear, and commanded him to pick up the serpent, demonstrate the nothingness, and it became a rod. He could not expect to throw away the rod power at once, but must take it up as a staff. Let it become the power of God. See it, sickness, error, work in us unto salvation." End quote.
Okay. So what does that mean, Karen?
Well, you know, when they talk about the rod and the staff, I immediately go to Psalms 23, where it said, love's rod and love's staff, they comfort me. We walk through the shadow of the valley of death. Love's rod and love's staff, they comfort us. So, you know, God did not give Moses that rod, malicious mesmerism. But we use these experiences, sickness, error, as means of
strengthening our trust in God, seeing the allness of God's perfect creation and the nothingness of anything unlike Him. And so we demand the blessing through every experience, and that is the rod and the staff on which we have to lean on after every experience.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Go ahead, Zeri. I see this as being a transformation. You know, the rock is a transformation. So if we're fearful of the serpent, then we're mesmerized by our fear. The transformation means that we are able to handle it with authority and with power.
Good, thank you. Well, I looked this up in the complete watching point. It was a long watching point.
And what was written here is only part of it.
Yeah, part of it, and which is all, you know, we have room for. We don't do the whole one, and I'm not going to read all of it to you either, but it starts, the watching point, watch, lest you strive to destroy nerves instead of the serpent in nerves. When Mrs. Eddy was preparing Dr. Alfred Baker to teach the course in obstetrics in the Massachusetts Metaphysical College, she gave him the following statement as the beautiful keynote of the class. Latest news from God. Handle the serpent in nerve. At the same time, she sent a telegram to Augusta Stetson. Electricity cannot convey poison to nerve centers. And then the next five paragraphs are what was included in today's watching point. But then Carpenter continues, the great unfoldment or latest news from God that Mrs. Eddy sent to Dr. Baker's class was that we should no more condemn nerves than we would condemn our radio because it was tuned into a program that we did not like. It is through the belief of nerves that all our suffering seems to come, but that is no reason for working to destroy them, since mortal mind never created them. Hence, what appears to be nerves is a human distortion of God's means and methods of communicating spiritual ideas. They are the spiritual antenna over which are transmitted the precious messages of good. Spiritually considered, they are God-given means by which man becomes conscious of God, man, and the universe. The talking serpent suggests that nerves are the medium through which that which is unpleasant comes to mortal man. But this is what the lie that must be handled. When Jesus met with his disciples at supper, the eating of food became a channel for spiritual uplift. When food is seen as a channel for inspiration and blessing, man's spiritual nature is fed. At the same time, his temporary material needs are taken care of. Foods and nerves are never the cause or source of man's discord. It is the serpent or mortal belief that claims to use matter as a medium through which to enslave mortals. So sometimes I talk about defanging a situation. That's what it is. It's taking the animal magnetism, the serpent, if you will, out of the situation. Nerves, and this was the obstetrics course that Mrs. Eddy was talking to Dr. Baker about, this was handling the belief that childbirth would be what?
Painful.
Painful.
Labor. Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. She was defanging it. Getting rid of the mortal mind belief. And so it always is. Anytime you're suffering from a mortal mind belief, a serpent lie, a suggestion that must be handled. And what does handling mean? How do you handle something?
Overcome with the power given, God's power.
Thank you.
Make it nothing.
The actual definition of handle is to manage, to be in charge of. I mean, in a way, you could say you overcome, right? And I like what Florence said. Yes. we make it nothing. So always remember it. But you don't get rid of the nerve. I mean, the nerve, because this was a, I think these are the two schools of thought we're talking about here. The nerve is not something you get rid of. The nerve, the right thought of the nerve, what is said here? What do the nerves do? The right thought.
Yeah, channel for God.
Yes, channel for God. Communication from God to man. Therefore, how could that be painful?
Mm-hmm. Hello. I would like to glorify God and Christian Science with this. I had four babies, and there was no pain in any of them. I had them at home with a midwife, and there was only Christian Science hymns. For some of those times, a practitioner was praying with me, and for some, it wasn't. And it was absolutely harmonious. There was no, as they say, complications. We know complications only come when we don't walk with God. There was absolutely nothing but harmony and joy. And I'm so forever grateful that Christian Science works when we really stick to it, understand it, and dedicate to it. And thank you guys for helping in all of this with this beautiful church and website.
Thank you. That's beautiful. Thank you, Ingrid. Now, I love what Mrs. Eddy says about this, the story of Moses. And yes, what Karen was saying is so true. Once you overcome this belief, defang it, then these are a rod and staff that you can lean on and know, yes, this works. This is it. You lean on that definite proof you've had that this is true. Mrs. Evans used to call it a star in your crown of rejoicing. When you have overcome some error and you've stepped on that serpent and killed it, it becomes a star in your crown of rejoicing that you can always go back to and remember and say, hitherto the Lord hath helped me, and hitherto he will. Now, Mrs. Eddy, and how many of us have had these examples in our lives, as Mrs. Eddy explains this phenomena with Moses, where something seems so real, so awful, maybe it's a disease, maybe it's lack, maybe it's depression, and almost in a moment, it's gone as you've applied that truth. I mean, it's amazing. You have to say, how could it be so real in one instance, and now it's a big nothing burger, as they say. How can that be, except that it was never true in the first place? So, Moses' advantage. What? Go ahead.
No, are you finished?
I'm just starting. go ahead.
No, I was just saying, that's why it says that you never come out of a real bad experience unchanged, because you have the confidence of the proving of what happened.
Yes.
You have more faith in God.
Thank you. Yes.
I would like to reinforce with this absolutely wonderful testimony. It says, I have seen that when Christian Science is understood and lived, it never fails to heal. This is one of the most wonderful testimonies in a pamphlet called The Triumph of Good.
Thank you. Well, and these, what we're all speaking about is proving the unreality of this belief of matter. Who else was speaking?
I was just going to say, maybe another way to think about it is the nerve is that the nerve is like the tuning in. And when you're not tuned into God, and the serpent can appear, but like when you tune into God, then it becomes the staff.
Yes. Yep. And I have to say, too, about pain, the belief of pain. If you've been entertaining for a long period of time painful beliefs, painful things in your past, and you're churning and ruminating over them, sometimes it does seem to result in a painful body. And as Carpenter would say, you haven't been using, well, he didn't say this. Carpenter says it's you're malpracticing on yourself, which is why you're having a difficulty, because you've been malpracticing. Giving reality to some experience in your past as being painful. So you must clear yourself of that and know that all that ever went on is God's love, God's goodness, and the things that you've learned from that experience, as was spoken about.
Because the mirror kind of represents a communication or a signal, right?
Right. Yes. Yep.
It has a spiritual purpose.
Yes.
I think that's the point. But the nerve itself as matter is a belief only. And that is what Mrs. Eddy says here. Matter was shown to Moses to be a belief only. And matter can appear to be good, or it can appear to be frightening. And either way, it's a belief. Because matter itself, in and of itself, has no what? Has no life, intelligence, or substance, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is so important that you all can see and understand this, because a lot of people have difficulty understanding the unreality of matter or of error, which is a very strong point in Mrs. Eddy's teaching, and which does separate us a lot from other religions, including most...
Other Christian religions.
Yes, other Christian religions. But it's a point that often evades people. That's why you must listen carefully and think about it and then start practicing it. And it's not good enough just to read about it. So, the Hebrew lawgiver, slow of speech, despaired of making the people understand what should be revealed to him. And truly, when you think about it, all the things he was teaching them was the unreality of matter, right? Not being afraid of it. They didn't have food. The river was in front of them. They couldn't cross over it. When led by wisdom to cast down his rod, he saw it become a serpent. And Moses fled before it. He was scared. But wisdom bade him come back and handle the serpent. Handle it, overcoming it, proving its nothingness, not fearing it. You know, the people who actually deal with serpents, they're not afraid of them, right? What are they called? Anyway, serpent dealers. No, there's nothing.
Snake wranglers.
The snake whisperers, right?
Yeah. And then Moses' fear departed, and so will yours. So you think you're sick? Challenge it. Go and handle it. Now we have that article, right? Handle of overcoming versus...
Overlooking.
Overlooking, right. Overcoming versus overlooking. Don't overlook it. Don't ignore it. Come back with all the power of God and say, the hell you say? What are you trying to tell me? And I don't believe it.
Don't just throw words at it, too. Like I said in here, Moses said, where is the serpent? God did not make one. God said, handle the serpent.
Yes.
Not enough to throw words at it.
Yes. Not just throwing words. You've got to overcome that fear and face it as David faced Goliath. In this incident, was seeing the actuality of science. Wow, that's huge. Matter was shown to be a belief only. The serpent evil, under wisdom's bidding, was destroyed through understanding divine science. And this proof was a staff upon which to lean. The illusion of Moses lost its power to alarm him when he discovered what he apparently saw was really but a phase of mortal belief. So whatever error you're looking at right now or might be is just but a phase of mortal belief. And then it was scientifically demonstrated that leprosy was a creation of mortal mind and not a condition of matter. When Moses first put his hand into his bosom and drew it forth white as snow with the dread disease and presently restored his hand to its natural condition by the same simple process. God had lessened Moses' fear by this proof in divine science, and the inward voice became to him the voice of God, which said, "It shall come to pass, if they will not believe thee, neither hearken to the voice of the first sign, that they will believe the voice of the latter sign." And so it was in the coming centuries, when the science of being was demonstrated by Jesus, who showed his students the power of mind by changing water into wine and taught them how to handle serpents unharmed, to heal the sick and cast out evils, in proof of the supremacy of mind. The capital M. And you know, when this is done, it seems so natural, because you're only bringing to light the truth and the error just drops away, that people will say, "Oh, you were never sick in the first place," or "that was just a coincidence," or because it is so incredibly natural. Remember this, and that's why you never fail to get on your knees to acknowledge what God has done. Because if it hadn't happened and you were going down this line of one problem after the next, you'd be, "It's God, and all this kind of thing. So remember what God has done for you. Yes, your star and your crown of rejoicing.
Okay. You don't want to be like the 9 lepers that got healed and didn't come back to give gratitude and thereby be made whole.
Exactly. That's exactly. That's why all of these stories are so incredibly important. And it's like squeezing an orange and getting all the juice out of every experience so you can be blessed by it.
I think one of the problems among the Christian churches is that everybody, or most people, I'll say, thinks of these illustrations of Christ Jesus as miracles. And if they would just stop calling them miracles, then realize that a miracle is a putting aside law. You know, it's outside of law. It's a miracle. Not everybody can do it. Jesus was special, because he was the Son of God, so only he could do them. But if we understand that he was proving the law of God, that they are present here, and that if they're laws, they're the laws of the universe that he was demonstrating, not putting aside, but demonstrating the laws that are available to everybody, that would change so much. But we think of them as miracles rather than demonstrations of universal law. And that's why it's, but that's what he was demonstrating, is, you know, God's law, ever present.
Thank you.
Nope, you're absolutely right. And to make that change requires an effort on people's part, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it requires that they accept a responsibility to maybe change the way they think and act, right?
Yeah.
And awakening.
Craig wants to speak. So,
I see every healing is awakening, and I know I had tremendous healing. And Mrs. Eddie's hymn, she says, "Over earth's troubled angry sea, I see Christ walk." So, every healing, there's something new that comes to us. It's in Christ, in some way, being revealed to us.
Thank you. Most definitely.
Yeah, and we just need to overcome the lazy human mind that doesn't want to change. Right?
Yeah.
And this all goes to our golden text, Jeremy.
Isaiah, "Who hath believed our report, and to whom is the arm of the Lord revealed?"
Thank you. And in a beautiful article by Ella Hoag that Carrie sent to me, Ella Hoag writes, "The scriptures contain many references to the arm of the Lord. Therein his arm is encountered mighty, holy, victorious, strong, glorious, tender, protective. This metaphor of God's arm has always been very precious to his people, since there is nothing men need more than the understanding of God's protecting, all-loving, almighty control. In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes, "He to whom the arm of the Lord is revealed will believe our report and rise into newness of life with regeneration. This is having part in the atonement. This is the understanding in which Jesus suffered and triumphed. And in miscellaneous writings, page 183, she asked the question, who hath believed our report? Who understands these sayings? And then she answers by declaring, he to whom the arm of the Lord is revealed, to whom divine science unfolds omnipotence, that equips man with divine power while it shames human pride. End quote. And in, she answers it. But in some other articles that Carrie sent, it said the same old thing, you know, a few centuries after Jesus taught and lived and demonstrated, everybody kind of got complacent, right? And they went back to their human ways and means. Certainly, as I guess it was Karen, right? Karen was bringing out all these things were miracles that none of us could do today, right? That's what they think. That's what, and the same thing, then it says, Mrs. Eddy, the same thing. She brings it all. This is perfectly natural. It's the laws and of the universe that we all should be living. But now look at some of the resistance and opposition.
Some of the resistance comes also from miseducation, and that people are purposely told, like the Maronite Christians in Lebanon are told that these are only miracles, and you, because you are not God and you don't want to blaspheme, you cannot heal. Only a priest could do it at best, or the Pope. And this is really distorting how the people have a relationship with God.
Absolutely.
Because we lose the demonstration.
Absolutely. And as I've mentioned, this series of documentaries, maybe you'd call them, American Heritage by David Burton, he goes into how originally the founding of our country, God, the Bible, going to church, these precepts were taught everywhere, and certainly in the schools. And we've mentioned and even read, you know, Harvard, Yale, all these schools. You had to know the Bible, right? It was a requirement. I think some of them started out as divinity schools.
Princeton did.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And look how far they've gone.
Yeah, the Capitol building was used as a church.
Thank you.
They had church services.
Thank you.
Sunday morning.
Yes.
And people went to church.
Thank you. And this history is lost. That's why I get this American Heritage. It's on YouTube, or you can buy it on DVD. Craig?
Oh, no, I was amazed. I didn't know that about the Capitol.
You wouldn't know. And they prayed all the time. And school prayer in school was absolutely accepted. And just as the Webster Dictionary, somewhere I'll have to bring it up. I have a newspaper article about the Webster Dictionary, the 1828 one. You know, if you look up words there, you'll have the godly or biblical definition of almost every word, right?
Yeah.
That's not in the dictionary anymore.
No, Carol has said a while that unworldliness is no longer in the dictionary. So.
That word unworldliness is not in the dictionary.
It's not even an option anymore. No. To be unworldly.
Wow.
Does that mean we can't say it?
Who knows? Probably correct. You have to be very careful what you say. Oh my goodness. Okay, who's talking?
I have found out in so many cases, or almost all of the cases, that opposition and resistance to people, I'll say specifically to Christian Science, I can see it's been always about false indoctrination and the forcing on religion on them, even at an early age, and later on they don't want anything to do with anything that is close to religion. So it always leads me to pray for just knowing that these are listening and obedient children of God, and usually that really opens the door and closes all and heals all this false indoctrination and forcing things on people. And so that's the way that Divine Mind had led me to deal with this misunderstanding or this error, especially from early ages, like in the case of the Muslims, for example, that God had brought to my path. And it really shows, you know, that it has to be a free thing. And when we force it on people, it just, of course, gives this opposition. And it's been a blessing to understand these things.
Thank you. It also should be, these teachings should just be natural and right. Yes, not forced, but natural and right. Florence and I talked about, you know, we were children. We went to Sunday school. That's what you did on Sunday. There was no questions about it. You got up, you got your Sunday best, and you went to church.
The idea of going to soccer practice wasn't even an option.
On Sunday morning.
Oh. But no, this is such an important point. Thank you for bringing this up. We can't change people, but we can live lives that illustrate God's great power and great love for us. And God can change people. Because
only God. Only God.
And if you've ever tried, as I have, to change someone, you'll know you'll be very unsuccessful. I mean, because you were in fact saying, well, you're something wrong with you. You need to be changed. So right away, they're going to oppose that. I mean, wouldn't you? So you meet that opposition. You've got to see them in the kingdom and knowing that they are receptive to this truth. And they will be.
And you have to be living it yourself.
Most definitely.
Because that's why I'm here. People who are living it themselves.
Right.
Exactly. And I was like,
me too.
I've heard from many people that the best teacher is a good example.
Yes. Yeah. Most true.
But I've seen people, they want success and happiness and satisfaction that we have through our demonstrating and learning, but they don't want to do the work. They can't get it any other way. So you got to just humble yourself and do the work.
Definitely.
Thank you.
Love God and trust Him first.
Thank you.
And we can also mention here the churches that say that they will save you. And there's no individual, no organization, no nothing that can save people. Just to mention it, because there's so many that, you know, have that.
I know. Thank you. Yeah, you hear often, you know, Jesus died for our sins, so everything's great now. I don't understand that. And they say it's in the Bible. Well, I don't know where that is. I don't understand it. It doesn't even make sense. That suddenly you're just scot-free because Jesus died for our sins.
Certainly doesn't help you in your moment of need.
No, it doesn't.
Or that God is so unfair and unmerciful that is going to make one person die for all the wrongdoings or the deed. That doesn't make any sense, right?
No, it doesn't. Chardell?
I've been reading lately that this is Eddie Week says, you may not be able to change people, only God can. But she blessed people. I just read it recently. She blessed people 5 hours a day. If the work piles up, you bless them. And in blessing them, will change.
It's very beautiful. We're going to end the class with that, which Chardell found by Gilbert Carpenter, writing about this blessing business. It's very beautiful, and it's certainly something we've learned here. Just by going through the motions, just by being on church committees, just by rushing around smartly, as Mrs. Eddy says, doesn't mean anything if you're not truly living it, and if you're not in the blessing business 5 hours a day blessing others. And I'm sure by that she meant the watches. So
I'm also having the right thinking wherever you go. Blessing instead of criticizing and stuff.
Yes. If you're not doing that, you've done nothing. You're what you read and what you are must correspond. They have to be one. You don't just read the Sermon on the Mount, you live the Sermon on the Mount. I've read several times about Abraham Lincoln, his mother's teaching him that as an early child, and he was very young. And of course, that's how he learned to read, reading the Bible. And he was never one to talk about going to church or maybe sounding that religious, but man, he lived that Sermon on the Mount. He lived what he learned, and he was sure of it. And he could speak to anybody who was going off course as far as that was. Mm-hmm. And that's what he found his connection in other people. Were they godly and living the Sermon on the Mount? I think that's why he saw what he saw in Frederick Douglass, because they had that oneness, that same mind, because that was another one who lived it and knew it and wasn't afraid to do that because he was so sure of it, because it's God-based. So Dale sent me something from Joseph Mann's 1923 class notes. Do you want to read it, Dale? Do you have it at hand? Otherwise, I can read it.
I have it. Did you want me to just read the last line or the whole paragraph?
Not very long. Go ahead.
Okay. Reading. The question where or how did evil originate is only a humanly wise way of implying that error is something instead of nothing. Knight asks about the origin and existence of its delirium-created world. Light answers, I find no such world, or even a speck of the inquiring darkness. A true understanding of science divinely dispels events. It does not humanly account for it.
Thank you. I get that often. Someone asked me just the other week, you know, where did all this error come from? This unreality. Where's this unreality from?
Or why did God create evil?
Yeah, why did God create evil? Over and over. It's a beautiful answer. The light doesn't even know about it. Nor does God.
God does not know evil.
Now, this too, and this is why you must familiarize yourself with Prose Works, Questions and Answers. And any question you might ask, the answers in Questions and Answers and Miscellaneous Writings on 64 to 65. Is it possible to know why we were put into this condition of mortality, or you could say unreality? It is quite as possible to know wherefore man is thus conditioned as to be certain that he is in a state of mortality, which is exactly what Joseph Mann was saying. The only evidence of the existence of a mortal man or of a material state and universe is gathered from the five personal senses. This delusive evidence science has dethroned by repeated proofs of its falsity. We have no more proof of human discord, sin, sickness, disease, or death, then we have that the earth's surface is flat and her motions imaginary. If man's ipsy dixit as to the stellar system is correct, this is because science is true and the evidence of the senses is false. Then why not submit to the affirmations of science concerning the greater subject of human weal and woe? Every question between truth and error, science must and will decide. Left to the decision of science, your query concerns a negative which the positive truth destroys. For God's universe and man are immortal. We must not consider the false side of existence in order to gain the true solution of life and its great realities. That makes sense, doesn't it? This was her perfect logic.
Yeah.
It depicts it.
Yeah, what is
an that? Assertion without proof.
Thank you. I did not look it up. Thank you. I know I have looked it up, but I didn't today. Anyway, so thank you. An assertion without proof. And, you know, in that article, The Word Made Flesh by Martha Wilcox, she brings out that so strongly, all these illusions that we seem to see, you know, it looks real, like of course the world is flat, but it's not. And so it is with all these illusions we seem to see that seem so real, but they are not. So remember this with whatever you are dealing with. And I thought our watch message, this was something that Linda found from the Red Book in our watch message last night. God is not in the earthquake, not in the fire, nor the flood. He is not in sickness, not in wrong, not in sorrow, nor in death. Then look away from these myths of mortal mind and listen. Now you catch the keynote of heaven, the still small voice of truth, pleading and interceding. That is so beautiful.
Relief.
It's a relief.
Such a relief.
It is.
Anybody in a dark place.
Yeah, thank you.
Truth is always searching for you. Mm-hmm. It's because it's always with you. It's always penetrating the thick wall of resistance that we might otherwise have.
Thank you. That's so wonderful.
Yeah.
Because there's a belief also that evil is always, you know, looking for you and stuff like that. So that's wonderful that you said that. Thank you.
Yeah. It is. It is. And so that's not true. Air is not looking for us. God is seeking us out, the Good Shepherd, always speaking to us, always. And this is powerful. So, Chardell, would you like to tell us what you wrote about?
Well, I love 205. Befogged error, the error of believing that matter can be intelligent for good or evil, we can catch clear glimpses of God only as the mists disperse or as they melt into such thinness. Well, I really like that. I thought, wow. And some of us talked about this too. Then we perceive the divine image in some word or deed which indicates the true idea, the supreme and reality of good, the nothingness and unreality of evil. Well, God doesn't know anything about mist thinning, but some of us human beings, it's very comforting to know that as it thins, we do understand. As we stop giving error so much light, as a friend of mine said. And then what Mrs. Eddy said, error comes to you for life, and you give it all the life it has. Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. You know, that to me, that's a good answer, too, as to the origin of evil and error. It comes to you for life, and you give it all the life it has. If you don't give it life, you'll find it's not true, and you can prove it. And that's what Mrs. Eddy said in that questions and answers. There's proof. This is what we stand on. We can prove the unreality of these things and prove the reality of all that's God good. Did you want to say anything, Bruce?
No, this is great.
Yeah. Okay, well,
actually, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Because we were talking earlier about Moses, and I think we've mentioned this thing about fear. And, you know, fear is nothing but suggestion. You know, evil can't make you do anything, and its only hope is that you don't do what's right, like conquer things and overcome. And the tool that it uses is fear, but fear is nothing more than a suggestion. It can be broken down. It doesn't have any substance to it unless we fall for it. And then it's certainly not God's plan for us.
No, and any time you fear, you bring yourself back to the first commandment. What power are you believing in other than God? What is it that's, you know, pulling your strings and making you to believe that there's some other power than God? Why are you not obeying the first commandment at this moment? Why are you not? And isn't it a commandment? No matter what, no matter how fierce things might seem, you are to be obeying that commandment. There's no power other than God. Therefore, whatever is scaring you to pieces is an illusion, a belief that there is some other power, a belief in sin, disease, or death, and stop giving it life. Tell it, as I read in that Kimball book, this place has changed hands. Don't know.
Vacancy.
Your lies, because that old Mary's not here anymore and listening to your lies. So just get thee hence, Satan.
I love the fact of they said that it's the truth has to be there for a lie to be lied about the truth, right?
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, I just like that. I like that very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That is, the truth is right there. You just got to dig it up and see it. And, you know, the responsive reading makes it very clear. And we talk about it a lot where it says that to be carnally minded is death. Okay? That's where we get the human mind is a killer. All right?
Yeah.
It's right there. So don't be tricked. When the human mind comes in, which is fear, negativity, lust, jealousy,
envy,
anxiety, all of those things, when you indulge in them, your dear little body is having a hard time. So don't do it to you, yourself. Replace it with what you know to be true. We were told, even if at first you don't believe it, start saying it, let it kick in. It will, because it is true. Don't believe the lie.
I was just remembering years ago at a Bible study, Jim Dibel said that fear was an acronym. It was false evidence appearing real.
So. Yes, thank you. Yes. And then also in the responsive reading, that nothing can separate you from the love of God. And this is where you declare your oneness. We should be declaring it all the time. There was an article Kerry sent on separation. And he says, every claim of sickness or sin is a claim of separation. A belief that man can be separated from God and from that which God gave him, namely health, harmony, perfection, and goodness. The belief you're separated from God. Your health is in God. So get back to your oneness. And then this beautiful statement before we close that Mrs. Evans gave us a long time ago. She said she went into a practitioner who at that time was Mr. Davidson. He had an office in New York City. And he read this from Science and Health. The one ego, the one mind or spirit called God is infinite individuality, which supplies all form and comeliness and which reflects reality and divinity in individual, spiritual man and things. And it was realized by that statement. There's a lot in that statement. I think I've written a whole article about it. But the one thing that Mrs. Evans emphasized was, and that Mr. Davidson emphasized was, you're not God, but God expresses himself through you. She said she went away on wings because it's such a powerful thought. You're not God, but God expresses himself through you. But that is only when you do what?
Get self out of the way.
Thank you. Get self out of the way. And humble yourself in the sight of God. On your knees, then he can use you. Okay, we're going to end with a blessing story.
Yes, and this is
by Gilbert Carpenter,
entitled The Important Work of Blessing Others. He writes, there is always the temptation in science to believe that we are accomplishing a great deal because we are engaged in a lot of active work. Yet in miscellaneous writings on page 230, Mrs. Eddy writes, rushing around smartly is no proof of accomplishing much. Students are under the temptation to believe that even though they may be busy just doing material labor for the cause, they are automatically blessed by doing it merely because it is intended for a worthy cause. Theoretically, that might be true, but it is not true practically. It is really a notion that is a hangover from old theology. There are those who might believe that because they are going on an automobile trip with a Christian scientist, there is less liability of an accident merely because he is a scientist. But such a proposition does not hold good unless he has a demonstrating thought and uses it to keep a protective thought alive and active. When he does that, others are safer in his company than anywhere else on earth. The officials of Mrs. Eddy's church from its inception were busy people, as they still are. No doubt they are tempted to believe, and still are, that they were and are privileged to fulfill the highest demands of Christian Science on them. From the beginning, their duties increased. Mr. Johnson's son relates of times when his home was a beehive of activity. There were times when he and his father worked into the small hours of the morning. In the letter in question, however, Mrs. Eddy introduced a keynote that was valuable to Mr. Johnson, as well as to all busy students. She knew how busy he was about the work of the organization, and she hoped to help him all she could to resist the temptation described above to believe that the work of itself carries a blessing. So she ended her letter to him, quote, "hoping you are blessed and blessing others," end quote. In this, she does not imply that the blessing came automatically through the work he had to do. She hoped, therefore, that he would see this as a call for mental alertness, knowing that he would get the blessing and be able to bless others if he handled the error. One does not bless others unless he handles the error, so that his desire to bless others is accompanied by the work that will accomplish it. Mrs. Eddy did not want any student ever to believe that activity without demonstration, even though it is activity in behalf of God's cause, is different from any other activity as far as our growth and blessing are concerned, unless we make it so. We grow in science and bless others because we know how to grow and to use that knowledge to produce growth and give out a blessing. It is a rule that when you have a position in which a great deal of work is expected of you, you have a greater demonstration to make to be able to remember your obligation to God, which must be done in spite of your obligation to man humanly. Thus, to one who understands metaphysics, such positions represent taking up the cross. One who desired to be a director, for instance, would thereby expose his unfitness for the position at the outset. A real scientist would consider such posts a cross, because they make it difficult for him to pursue his real work as a student, namely, being blessed and blessing others. In order to do this, he would have to demonstrate over the constant demands on his time and thought. In latter years, it would appear as if the directors were seeking to take on more and more responsibility. Perhaps they want to feel that they are earning their money, and to show the field that there is such a demand on them for constant activity that they are worth the salary they get. Yet the most valuable servants in Christian Science, those who are the best servants of God, are those who are making the demonstration to be blessed and so blessing others. They receive the greatest reward spiritually, even if their reward humanly is small. Mrs. Eddy set the great example in her own home. The daily life there was of such a nature that no matter how busy the students and their leader were, no matter how much work they piled up, the work of blessing others and so being blessed had to go on. Out of each working day, 5 hours were given over entirely to this work of blessing others. Then, when that was taken care of, the rest of the time was given over to the material side of the work. But But the important side was the work of blessing and being blessed.
Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.